CIB. From Australian police records come these true stories of day and night vigilance that protects our lives and our property, of prevention and detection in the unceasing war against crime. CIB. From New South Wales, the true story of the Barrackool Bones. This is a true story from Australian police records. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. The Barrackool Bones story is one of the most extraordinary. It's extraordinary not because its superficial features vary so very greatly from those of many other mysteries which Australian CIB men have been called on to solve. It's extraordinary because the men who committed the crime had, to say the very least of it, a macabre and ingenious turn of mind. So it happens, few cases in the history of crime detection provide a more interesting study of modern investigation methods, or demonstrate better how the logic of, what shall we call it, elimination, can prove beyond all reasonable doubt that the truth is often much, much stranger than crime fiction. The story begins one summer evening some years ago, when a young woman whom we shall call Beverly Kinson was listening to a radio program in her lodgings in a Sydney suburb.
Who on earth can that be?
I'll answer if you like, Bev. Tell him you're not in if you like.
Oh, no, it might be the family. They're worried about Roger. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, turn off the radio, Bob.
All right. Hello? Hello, is that you, Bev?
Oh, Roger. Oh, thank heaven you've called. Where on earth have you been? Mum's been absolutely frantic.
I'm all right.
Where have you been? Where are you? Oh, Roger, you're an absolute beast. Mum's worried stiff, honestly, she is.
Never mind about that. I just wanted to ring you, Bev.
And so you jolly well ought, walking out like that.
I've just rung to say goodbye, that's all.
Goodbye? Well, I like that, I must say. Where are you going?
Doesn't matter. I'm just going away, and I wanted to say goodbye.
Oh, for heaven's sake, stop being so melodramatic.
I'm not being melodramatic. I mean it. I'm going.
Very well, then. You're free, white, and 21. There's nothing to stop you going wherever you want to go, is there? But if you want to say goodbye, please come out here and say goodbye to me properly.
Who was it, Pep?
Roger, my brother.
So he hasn't gone missing after all.
All right. Be sarcastic if you want to. But I'm worried about him. I really, honestly am. I don't know what on earth has come over that boy. Truly, I don't.
That was all. The last warning of an impending tragedy. A call from a boy who'd gone missing from his home. A call to say goodbye. Remember, in this story of the Barrackool Bones, there's no trick in the presentation of the evidence. You have much more than the police had to begin with. They didn't come into it till weeks later. Hundreds of miles away in a remote outback district.
Oh, Bill. Yeah, steady, don't you?
Todd, what's wrong? What's happened?
Here. Look, Mother, I'll tell you all about it in a minute. Yeah, the phone's working, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. I was ringing Mildred only half an hour ago.
Okay.
Oh, Todd, you're as pale as a ghost. What's wrong with you?
Hello. Hello, Exchange. Barrackool 3, please. Yes, sir, the police station.
Oh, Todd.
Urgent, please.
Oh, good heavens.
Yes, sir.
What's happened?
Hello. Hello, Sergeant Davies there? Oh, it's Todd Sexby speaking. Now, listen, I'm not kidding. I don't want to talk about this on the phone, but hang on, will you? Wait until I get into town. I'll get the ute out and they'll be in half an hour. Yes, it's urgent. As urgent as it can be.
Now, take it steady, Mr. Saxby. Where was this fire?
I told you. Down at the bottom of the 10-acre paddock where Murphy's property comes onto the creek.
I see. And how did you come to notice it?
Oh, Sergeant, look, I've told you. I was mustering down by the creek and I spotted these crows. I thought maybe one of the ewes was down or something, so I went to have a look. The crows got up and I saw where the fire had been.
All right, Mr. Saxby, I've got that straight. Well, then what?
Heavens, man, don't you listen? I rode down to look it over, and the mare shied and played up a treat. So I got off and tied her to the carriage on tree, and I walked over.
And then?
Well, I didn't spot anything at first. But the fire being down there had me beat. I started to poke around, and, well, I spotted what looked like the barrel of a rifle and those bones.
I see. And according to you, well, they're not the bones of a beast, eh?
Well, do you reckon I'd have down there founded me mare getting back to the house and rung to stop you going into Pilliger if they'd been the bones of a beast?
No, Mr. Saxby. No, I don't. You've got the utility, haven't you?
Yes, sure.
How far can we drive down towards the 10-acre?
Well, within half a mile or so, I reckon.
Well, we'd better stop over and pick up Dr. McLean. I'd like to have his opinion.
Yeah. Yes, you're dead right. But I'll tell you something.
What?
The poor devil that was burned in that fire was murdered and done away with. Sure as my name's Todd Saxby. You've got a case of murder on your hands.
A case of murder. Sergeant Davis hadn't run across much of that sort of thing in his years in the force. An odd bit of cattle duffing, a fight between drunken shearers outside the pub on Saturday afternoon, petty thieving in the cricket club pavilion. These were misdemeanors more in his line. But his early training held good.
Careful, Mr. Saxby. Don't disturb more of that ash than you can help.
Is the duck good enough?
Aye, that'll do.
Well, Doctor, what's the verdict?
Sergeant Davies.
Yes?
Look here.
Yes? What is it?
You see that? Recognize it?
No, I can't say that I do.
Well, if you'd done anatomy, you would. That is the head of a human femur. And that, if I haven't forgotten my bones, is a scapula with a part of humerus attached.
Human?
Aye, human. Saxby's right. A body has been burned here.
Here, I dig out the rest, Sergeant?
No, leave it. Leave it alone. We've found out what we came for.
Yes, sir.
Leave it, I said. This is a job for the CIB. Come on, you fellows. I want to get onto a telephone somewhere.
Within hours of Sergeant Davies phoning his district superintendent, two skilled investigators from Sydney's Criminal Investigation Branch had taken over the problem of the Barracool bones. First, they carefully sieved every ounce of ash from the large fire of brushwood and dead timber that had so nearly destroyed all traces of the body. And then they took stock of what they'd found.
Sacrum, pelvis, lumbar vertebrae, femur, scapula, skull fragments, teeth. Miscellaneous pieces of charred bone, right?
Right.
What else?
Barrel of a main 22 caliber rifle, single shot, discharged case in breech. Check.
Check.
Man's gold wristwatch, Vaughan brand key, nail file, nickel cigarette case, belt buckle, bottle opener, two trouser clips, fastener buttons, 10 shillings in silver, 5 pence in copper.
Right?
Right.
That the lot?
That's the lot. I'll tell you one thing. I'll lay 10 to 1 it takes time to track this stuff down.
You see, something will turn up.
Maybe. You're the optimist of the team, Tom. Well, come on, let's see if the others have got anything.
Okay. Hello, Sergeant. Didn't hear you come back.
Hello, Inspector. Anything fresh?
Not exactly. We were going to ask you that. What do your bushman mates say?
There was only one thing of much importance, Inspector. All three of them agree, independently, that those ashes are about a month old.
Well, I suppose you might call that a help. And then again, you mightn't.
Well, of course it's a help. It fixes the burning of that body at some time around the end of October. Those experts of yours are pretty reliable, I suppose, Sergeant.
Well, I reckon so. But I suppose you could call in a tracker if there's any doubt.
Well, if the three of them agree, I suppose there's not much point in it. How's the search going?
Nothing, sir. Devil a thing.
No sign of tracks?
None. Only sheep and the prints of Saxby's mare. Well, you wouldn't expect to pick up much after a month, but we've got half a dozen men going over the sandy bits and the river flats, inch by inch.
No camp of any sort?
No. We've pretty well covered a radius of up to 4 miles now, and there's no sign of a camp.
You know, it beats me how the murderer got the body there without leaving some trace. Something. How did he work it? No sign of interference with fences? No wheel or hoof marks that aren't accounted for?
Yes. Rummy. Very rummy. I say, Sergeant.
What?
You must know the district pretty well by now. How long did you say you'd been stationed here?
8 years.
Yeah. Well, you'd know all about the family feuds around here, wouldn't you? Do you know anybody who's supposed to have gone away on a long trip abroad or something of the sort?
I'd thought of that one. No, it doesn't gel. Nobody's unaccounted for 20 miles around that I know of.
Well.
What?
Well, I guess we'll have to do it the hard way, that's all.
Do what?
Identify the body.
Fine, but how?
We'll have to play the old numbers game, Sergeant, that's all.
The numbers game?
Oh, don't worry. We've just gone through the stuff we sieved out of the ashes. There's a key and a watch and a rifle barrel.
Yes, Todd Saxby spotted the rifle. Well, by Jove, yes. A key and a watch and a rifle, all numbered. Well, that might help.
Don't you make any mistake, Sergeant. If the ghost of the poor chap whose body was burned out there in the bush was to give us his name on a planchet board, it still wouldn't be in the bag, not by a long chalk.
In a moment, we'll continue this true story from Australian police records. This is a true story from Australian police records. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. After the most exhaustive inquiries in the Barrackool district, the CIB men were forced to admit complete failure to turn up any clue to the identity of the man whose body had burned on the lonely bush funeral pyre. Or any clue, indeed, that threw light on how he'd died. The mystery caught the public imagination, and the police sought to speed up identification.
Paper, paper, Barrackool bomb mystery, paper, all the latest. Paper,
paper, Barrackool Bone Mystery, all the way down, paper, paper. How's it going, Dennis? Any calls about that picture in the papers?
No. What would you expect? Picture of one half-melted watch and one blackened key. Who the heck could identify them?
Yeah, well, it's worth a try.
I wish the boys in England would hurry up tracking down those manufacturers' numbers, that's all.
Oh, give them time, then. Anyway, I've got a bit of a lead that might be worth following up.
Oh, what's that?
You saw the expert's report on those bones, didn't you?
Sure. Male, aged between 20 and 26. Tall, powerfully built. All the bones from the same individual. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Well, the boys have turned up something on the missing persons list that may just lead us somewhere.
Have they now? Go on.
Young fellow named Roger Kinson. Age 21. Height just over 6 feet. Reported missing by his parents at the beginning of October. No trace of him since. Fits in a rough sort of way, doesn't it?
In a rough sort of way, yeah.
Well, the sleepers put a couple of men onto it, just to see how the land lies.
They turned up anything?
Negative. The kid was worried about losing his job or something and just went through, it seems. So far, we haven't been able to trace any country contacts. That's the stumbling block.
Yes. Why go through to Barrackool of all places? However, are you doing anything about it?
Well, a brother named Hugh lives out Coogee way, works in a factory there. We'll see if he recognizes the watch and the key while we're waiting for the replies on the numbers.
Mr. Kinson?
Huh?
Are you Mr. Hugh Kinson?
Yes, sir. What do you want?
We're detectives from headquarters, Mr. Kinson. Can you spare us a moment?
Detectives, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay, you're here. Come in here. Sorry, I couldn't hear you out there. You said you were detectives, didn't you?
That's right.
Is it about young Roger?
Well, to be frank, Mr. Kinson...
Is he in any sort of trouble?
No, we didn't mean that. It's, well, we're not actually certain that it is about your brother. We're just trying to find out.
Well, how can I help you?
Well, I wonder if you'd mind looking at these articles, Mr. Kinson. Do you recognize them?
Well, do you?
No, I'm afraid I don't. A key and a watch, isn't it?
Yes. They didn't belong to your brother, then?
They had a picture of those in the papers, didn't they?
Yes.
No, I don't recognize them. I don't think they could have belonged to Roger.
You sure, Mr. Kinson?
Well, a man can't be that sure. But no, I don't reckon they belong to Roger, that's all.
Okay. Just a shot in the dark, Mr. Kinson, that's all. Thanks a lot.
That's all right. I reckon this means you haven't got any news of the kid, doesn't it?
I'm afraid not. If I were you, I wouldn't worry too much. He'll turn up all right in the end.
I'm not worrying. It's only Mum. You know how women are.
Yes. Well, thanks. We won't keep you. Good day, Mr. Kinson.
So long.
Tom, the cable from England's come in. Mm. At the Barracool business. Key number's been traced.
Oh, fine.
It's a locker key that came out with a shipment to Furness and Company 4 years ago.
Have you followed through?
What do you think? It was a long job, mighty long job. But we've got the answer.
And what was the answer?
Furness has supplied that locker to the Youth Fellowship Club on order for the new gymnasium. That and 11 others.
And what did the YFC say?
The locker was allotted last year to a man named Roger Mortlake Kinson.
And that, you may think, was the beginning of the end. But in point of fact, it was only the beginning. The identification of Roger Kinson's remains was accepted by the police as fact, only after further exhaustive inquiries.
3078/472XA. Ah, yes. Records here, gentlemen. Main single-shot rifle, 22 caliber, sold on March the 19th this year for cash to... Let me see. Oh, the name is Roger M. Kinson.
Well, the 7 and the 0 and the 2 8s are pretty clear in the case.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to swear it was the same watch. But here you are. Take a look at my books.
Oh, thanks.
Elgin Roll Gold Case, 15 jewels, NA/740388. Sold on the 4th of November, 7 years ago, to Hugh A. Kinson.
Hugh Kinson? My brother. And he didn't remember, eh? Didn't recognize the watch case. I wonder.
At last, there was no possible doubt at all about the identity of the Barracool bones. Everything, literally everything, pointed to them being the mortal remains of Roger Mortlake Kinson. But nothing, literally nothing, that the detectives could discover gave any clear indication of how his body came to be destroyed by the flames of the funeral pyre built in Todd Saxby's 10-acre paddock.
Well, Dennis, how's it coming?
It isn't. That's the trouble.
Got all the reports in?
Yes, Inspector. And read them until my eyes are hanging out.
And there's no lead?
No lead at all.
You've checked on that brother who says he didn't recognize the watch and the key?
Checked and double-checked and triple-checked. He just honestly didn't recognize the stuff, that's all.
No family trouble?
None.
A woman?
Not even the whisper of it.
Then why did Roger Kinson go missing?
No good reason. Except that he'd been laid off work for a while and was worried about it. It seems he thought he was going to be a burden on the family or something, and he just took off.
Worried, eh? I see.
We've had a yarn to her sister who lives out in the eastern suburbs. He rang her to say goodbye. She said he sounded very depressed. She was a bit sharp with him, I gather. But it didn't do any good.
Have any money with him that you know about?
A few pounds, Inspector.
Well, what with the gold watch and the silver being found in the ashes, the possibility of robbery being a motive doesn't seem very high, does it?
I'd say not.
Listen, I've just thought of something. Some of the other boys have been out to see the mother, haven't they?
Yes, wasn't much you. She didn't know anything. What's on your mind?
Leave it for the moment. We're going out.
Where are we going?
Out to see the mother.
Oh, it's dreadful, Inspector, dreadful. Thinking about it has nearly driven me out of my mind. Who could have done it to Roger? Who?
Mrs. Kinson.
Yes.
I know that all these questions are terribly distressing to you, and we're sorry. But you can see how important it is that this mystery should be cleaned up, can't you?
Yes.
You've already told us that you can't even imagine any motive for someone wanting to kill you, sir.
None at all.
Well, you're not alone in that. And we won't go over the ground again. But I'd like to talk about your son himself for a while.
He was a good boy. So conscientious.
Mrs. Kinson, I see by the reports that you mentioned to one of our men that he was very worried about losing his job.
Yes. He was terribly worried, poor boy.
Mrs. Kinson, was your son very highly strung? You know what I mean, the worrying type.
Yes, Inspector, he was. He took things so seriously. He got so depressed and upset if anything went wrong. His father and I used to worry about it.
It wasn't only just losing the job, then?
No. His father was quite worried about him last year. He made Roger go along to the doctor for a checkup. He thought there might be some physical cause for him being in such low spirits.
And was there?
No. The doctor said he was quite sound physically.
Do you mind telling us who the doctor was, Mrs. Kinson?
Of course not. He's our family doctor, Dr. Wilkinson. His surgery is just down at the corner.
Thank you. Now, just one thing more. This rifle your son bought just a short time before he disappeared.
Yes.
I see you, or rather your husband, tell one of our men that the lad kept it under the mattress of his bed, and that your husband asked him what he wanted it for.
Yes, that's true.
And your son replied, for burglars, I suppose. Is that correct?
That's what Father told me. I didn't actually hear it myself.
Thank you, Mrs. Kinson. Thank you very much. We won't have to trouble you anymore, I hope.
Oh, if you could only find out what did happen. If only you could.
Sobered by the thought that there was now a strong possibility the whole investigation had been keyed to a false assumption that Roger Kinson had been murdered and his body burnt on the back paddock of the lonely Barrackool farm, the CIB men again assessed their evidence and added to it from channels of inquiry suggested by the new line of thought.
Did you see the doctor, Tom?
Yes.
Result?
Yes. Emotional instability, he put it. Early signs of mental illness, and depression, morbid fears.
What do you think really happened then?
I think he was contemplating suicide for weeks, possibly months. I think he bought the rifle for that purpose. I think he went completely around the bend, poor young chap. Took off, wandered around the country for 2 or 3 weeks. Then screwed up his courage to the sticking point.
I see. You mean...
Yes. I mean just that. I mean that he made a neat job of it in Saxby's 10-acre paddock by building a pyre, lighting it in 3 places, climbing onto it and shooting himself dead. Right?
By golly.
Yes. Funny how you sometimes can't see the wood for the trees, isn't it? Now, who'd have thought when we first looked at those burns at Barrackool that they were all that was left of the murderer? The man who murdered himself and burned his own body.
Police inquiry didn't stop, however, when deduction had pointed to the only possible solution to the mystery. In time, Roger Kinson's movements were traced in the Barrycool district with the help of photographs. He'd been seen on the road only 3 miles from the funeral pyre on the day when a nearby farmer had seen smoke from a large fire rising from Saxby's paddock. And when he was seen on the road, Kinson was alone. Only names, place names, and dates were altered in this true story. It was dramatized from Australian police records by Edward Dawkins. This is Roland Strong saying goodbye until the same time next week, when there'll be another true story in this series, which is produced for the studios of Hector Crawford Productions by Dorothy Crawford.